The warm air, the sounds of baseball, it's got you thinking about hitting the road. And no matter where your adventures take you, Subaru of Gwinnett has a vehicle to get you there safely and in style. Like the 2024 Subaru Outback, sporting standard symmetrical all-wheel drive and up to 32 miles per gallon. Or the 2024 Subaru Forester, the SUV with a spacious and comfortable interior for everyone you want to bring along. Start your shopping online at SubaruofGwinnett.com, then come see us for a test drive on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the only show in America that features a one-term has-been retired politician that nobody knows on Extra 106.3.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show on Extra 106.3, Atlanta's only conservative talk station. I'm going to give you a handful of instructions. If you will go DM me on Twitter or Instagram, Twitter at Ben Burnett, Instagram at The Ben Burnett Show. Send me a message. I will send you a Peach State Pride hat. They're super nice. I think they sell in the stores. Well, I mean, they've got my logo on them, but they sell in the stores for about 40 bucks a piece. We'll mail them all to you. I'll do that again before the end of the segment in case you're in your car. You want to write it down. There's been a lot that's happened in this week. I was on spring break as well. I took my happy family to Southern California. We went to see the Joshua Tree, surfed down at Wind and Sea Beach, took them to the zoo, climbed the hikes at Torrey Pines, went to 29 Palms. It's a great place to go visit. Probably not living there, but I'll tell you this, to get out of the allergies for just a couple of weeks or just a couple of days and to get out of the pollen, I definitely think about having an April house in San Diego or in Palm Springs until all the pollen finally washes away. But I digress. Some days later, we see that our old favorite running back turned alleged murderer has passed away due to prostate cancer in O.J. Simpson. I don't know if there's an event that defines the 90s more than that car chase with Al Cowlings. I was reading comments about it with Cato Kalin. It was honestly like I was a kid again. I know plenty of you were older than I was. I was in elementary school and then moving into middle school. I remember sitting in my seventh grade classroom with Judge Lance Alito delivering the verdict that he was found not guilty. That was definitely not the end of OJ's legal problems. He went to jail in Las Vegas some years later for some sort of like shady transaction that may have involved weapons, threatening people. It got kind of fuzzy from there. That was a guy that was just America's darling. You look at the 80s and the early part of the 90s, like that dude, he was famous. Like famous on a level that people don't realize. And this is before social media. That fall from grace was absolutely dramatic. It's kind of a side note to it. I had Marcus Allen, the running back at the University of Southern California, played for the Raiders, played for the Chiefs. He won everything. He's probably the only running back in USC history that's better than OJ was. And he was last spring I had him. He's actually a neighbor of mine, which when I saw him at Chipotle, I was like, there's no way that Marcus Allen lives in North Fulton. And so I approached him some days later to just tell the whole story about growing up, going to USC, playing in the NFL, deciding to move away from California into more of a conservative place like Georgia. And yes, that is actually why Marcus Allen moved to the Southeast. He got tired of the politics of California. There are African Americans all over the country, and we all think they identify as Democrats or liberals, and I have news for you, they do not. And plenty of them have made tons of money, plenty of them have tons of name ID and notoriety, and they're tired of it too. Of course, when you get to a place where you start to think for yourself, I think a lot of us wind up there. And even though a lot of us wind up there, I don't necessarily think that we always sit there and agree with our own party. I have tremendous concerns about governing strictly with populism. I know that President Trump has made it known that he would like to see the abortion restrictions that the states' rights now have be a little less restrictive. But to be honest with you, that was his own doing. It's one thing to say it when you're in office. It's another to say it when you're a candidate. And I honestly, for the future of the Republican Party, as we've seen with ballot referendums in Ohio, over the course of the last year, I think Republicans are kind of telling you in numbers that I think that the way that we have chosen to go as a party may not make the most sense. I understand that that lives in conflict with 75% of my audience, who I know identify as conservatives. But if all the Democrats feel one way and 25% of the Republicans also feel the same way, it creates a huge conflict. As you look at 2024, I think that abortion, which I thought was going to go away as an issue on the national landscape 2 or 3 years ago, it's come front and center. It is never more a part of the conversation. We've all kind of gotten used to the inflation that we've seen. We've all gotten a little bit used to what things cost and how it's more expensive than it was for yesterday and yesteryear. And I don't know that the gas and groceries message resonates anymore, especially with Republican voters of means. I realize again that I'm not necessarily talking to the masses. But when you start to take sizable issues and you take persuadable Republicans off the table over single voter issues, it creates a confluence of events that may lead to some problems for Donald Trump. It may lead to some problems for the Republican Party. We do the same thing with guns all the time. Personally, I am a Second Amendment absolutist, but I recognize that not everybody in my neighborhood is, and plenty of them vote based on abortion or based on gun rights. I'm not telling you that they're right to not look at the big picture or that they're wrong to not look at the big picture. I'm telling you that the American people, by and large, believe what they're told. So when you choose to trust your sources in news, be wise. That is the most important thing I could ever tell you. If you ever have 5 or 10 minutes to get into an issue and really dig into what it is, who's behind it, it answers so many questions for yourself. That's what we try to do on Saturday and Sunday. We take some of the issues that Monday through Friday, where you're playing the hits, you don't have all the time in the world to sit there and get super deep into issues or get super deep into it with guests. It's one of the reasons why I've seen my show grow. It's not the same thing. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to do that. Candidly, if you put me on Monday through Friday and I had to talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene, Mike Johnson, guns, abortion, taxes, inflation, the Biden crime family, I'd have a hard time waking up and going to work in the morning. And so I am grateful to Extra 106.3, Atlanta's only conservative talk station, for being supportive of what I'm doing. One of the biggest stories of the week is that President Biden, by hook or by crook, continues to utilize the student loan forgiveness messaging and platform. This week, he rolls out another $7.4 billion for 277,000 borrowers, which, I mean, 277, that's a lot of people. I live in Alpharetta, Georgia, city that's got 60,000 people, so it's five times that size if you counted every single resident. And that is his fourth or fifth attempt to cancel student loans. And to this point, the man has canceled $153 billion. That is 1.5% of all of you. Somebody listening to me right now can hate this policy, hate everything that it's grounded in. It 100% affected you. 1.5% of the American people have had loans forgiven by Joe Biden. Do you think that that is a partisan ploy or a hack? Yes. As you have looked and seen America's budget creep north of $31 trillion with $2 trillion in deficit spending year over year, if you asked me the question just based on math, this is the one thing that absolutely has to change. And I don't mean student loan forgiveness specifically. I mean entitlements, and nobody wants to do it. President Trump came out. We know the Democrats don't want to raise the Social Security age. If they had any political capital or any political power at all, they would lower it. And then they would lump more people into it and finance the debt in order to put more people on the Democrat payroll. But you're also starting to see signs in the bond markets that say that this is not going to happen. You've seen Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, in the last week say, "We thought we were going to be able to reduce interest rates, and now we're not sure." Well, welcome to the party, buddy. You can't make it free to borrow when you have a country that is borderline insolvent. You can't sit there and reduce interest rates. It's one of the reasons why you hear the gold and silver and precious metals commercials all over Fox News, all over CNN, and candidly, you hear them on this radio station. You listen to Clay and Buck, you hear them then too. Those are ways that people choose to hedge against inflation. Solid gold bars, like our friend Bob Menendez, the senator from New Jersey, likes, gets from the Egyptian government. It's one of the reasons why it's one of the biggest selling items at Costco. People are afraid of tomorrow, and the American people are wising up to it. When you look at the one-year treasury rates, and this is going to bore some of you, you can get 5% on your money. But if you look at the 30-year treasuries, if you look at the 25-year treasuries, and you're starting to see those numbers creep up into the threes and fours, this country is in big trouble. And it's in big trouble because they have entirely too many entitlements. They have entirely too many programs like these social justice giveaways for people who took out way too much debt, whose parents didn't teach them anything about fiscal responsibility, who let them go to Harvard in order to become a social worker, and then they were wondering why they owed $300,000 against it. It's wrong, and it takes advantage of the people like me and the people like you. Look, I'm the guy who sits here and saves 15 or 20% for retirement. I save for my kids to go to school. I hope that my children have the opportunity to go to school wherever they want. But when they are 16 and 17 years old, if I can't afford to send them to Duke or Harvard, I'm going to look at them in the eye and be like, buddy, there's nothing wrong with going to Georgia Tech. It's a great place to go to school. You can get a world-class education at essentially a sixth or a seventh of the cost. Don't paralyze yourself in the long term over this. And it is wrong for our Congress to let this continue to sit and happen. And then the American government has the balls to underwrite the loans that go into this. That's what makes it even worse. The American government has got to get out of the business of damn near everything that it is in. Coming up in the next segment, I have a good friend of mine. He was an 07 United States Navy Admiral, Tillman Payne. I had him on the show last summer. We profiled his career. He worked on the professional Navy staff under former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld when George W. Bush was President of the United States. An interesting conversation. We unpack the war in Ukraine, where it is. We unpack the events in October with Hamas, Israel, and Iran, which seems to be beating on the door. And we talk about China and Taiwan. If you like foreign issues and current events, it is something that you're not going to want to miss. If you will send me a message on Twitter at Ben Burnett, follow me, whatever, get my attention, wave at me, I don't care. Or send me a DM to the Ben Burnett Show on Instagram, or you can find me on Facebook. I will send you a Peach State Pride hat. Need your name and your address. I'm not going to sit here and hunt you down, put you on any sort of mailing list. I'm just going to mail you something really nice. Just for being pretty, just for being you. This is Extra 106.3, Atlanta's only conservative talk station. We will be right back.
The warm air, the sounds of baseball, it's got you thinking about hitting the road. And no matter where your adventures take you, Subaru of Gwinnett has a vehicle to get you there safely and in style. Like the 2024 Subaru Outback, sporting standard symmetrical all-wheel drive and up to 32 miles per gallon. Or the 2024 Subaru Forester, the SUV with a spacious and comfortable interior for everyone you want to bring along. Start your shopping online at SubaruofGwinnett.com, then come see us for a test drive on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
This is the Ben Burnett Show on Extra 106.3.
Welcome back to the Ben Burnett Show on Extra 106.3, boys and girls. My guest of the hour is a man whose long-form podcast you can hear sometime last summer, I think we put it out. He's a one-star retired Admiral Tillman Payne. Admiral Payne, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ben. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me back.
You're the foreign correspondent or the military correspondent of the radio station at this point. So you have made it. We have nobody. There's no two-star guys we've had out there that'll come on. I'm grateful to you for that. There's a handful of things I just want to get into in this second segment, because conservatives, especially, I'll even say Southerners in general, mm-hmm. are very, very proud of their family history and their military service and the people, like they're the people with yellow ribbons on trees, probably at a greater extent than anywhere else in the country. So it's near and dear to all of us. None of us are immune from it from a familial standpoint. One of the things that I have seen is that military recruitment, especially amongst enlisted ranks, and it's really military-wide, the numbers are down. And a lot of people say that it is the left-leaning woke agenda. I'm sure you've heard all the phrases that have mm-hmm. driven those numbers down. What do you attribute that to as a guy who spent 30 years in the military?
Yeah, I would put less weight in the argument that you make with the whole wokeness, but the economy the unemployment right now is pretty low. The military always has trouble recruiting when the unemployment is low, when there are other options for people. The other thing is that that people have less and less exposure to our military. And so it tends to be a closed cycle, sort of a closed detailing cycle. People that have aunts or uncles that served or parents that served are far more likely to pick the military as an opportunity than people that don't have that exposure. And so the folks that are out in the Midwest that don't have any knowledge, have never been near a base, have never really seen or know anybody that served, they just pick something else.
The common ground in the family.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I wonder about it because what are some of the things that you see the military doing right now that are along the right guidelines as far as bonuses, retention bonuses, things like that, to keep people in and to attract people into it, especially amongst your 18 and 19-year-old enlisted ranks?
They're really trying very hard to break the mold and think outside the box in retention bonuses, initial signing bonuses, the training you get. They also have, to take on a department head for a surface warfare officer to sign on to serve as his department head after his initial obligation is over. They could get up to $100,000 as a bonus.
Which, that's real money to me.
Yeah.
That's real money to anybody who doesn't play for the Braves.
You know, pilots that will continue their service after initial obligation, after they had their pilot training, same kind of thing. Big bonuses are available. And all the way up through the more senior officers to command. You know, there's a bonus that you get to be in command in the 05, which is the commander, or the 06, the captain level.
As you look at everything going on around the world, we've had this conversation last summer about, and it seems that nothing really changes. China's still pounding their chest over Taiwan. I don't know when and if that ever happens or if that's just a good political stance to take here and there. You've got Russia and the war in Ukraine, and the Americans seem content to just fight over whether we should give them two nickels. They're all polarizing issues. But the one thing I think that has changed since the last time we talked was that Hamas, in a terrorist attack, went after Israel. And I don't know that they got the response that they have envisioned because they have found themselves, in a literal sense, in a holy war.
It's a tragedy on so many levels. You know, it's what happened in October is inexcusable, what Hamas did. But I think that Israel has now started to lose support around the globe for continuing to hammer at Gaza and the innocent civilians that are being sacrificed during the campaign. It's a tragedy all the way around.
Well, I always say, if you ever look at the Middle East history, it is a tale of two bad brothers. And it has been since all the religious books have ever come about. If they ever have the opportunity to do the wrong thing for the other side, they will never pass it up. And that has remained, you know, you said before we were on the air, it's remained for centuries. I'd argue it's longer than that. I mean, you've seen cities in Turkey change names and religions several times over the last 1,000 or 1,500 years. As you look at that, knowing that Hamas has Iranian resources, knowing that Hamas has a calling on warfighters or sympathizers, however you want to say it. I'm not on Team Hamas. I don't know a lot of people that are. But as you look at that, does anything about that situation today scare you, knowing that the Iranians are just knocking on the door? I always think they're praying for a conflict.
It's a cauldron ready to boil over. And there are so many surrogates that are involved in that. It's got to be deftly handled by us and by our allies over in the Middle East to try and keep it from exploding into something much bigger and try and keep it back in the box and enable peace to occur. But, you know, all the fighting that's going on right now, the bombing and the attack that happened in October, all that has just extended for generations now, the hatred that had been percolating. And any chance of some kind of resolution has now been, the hatred has just been extended for generations to come.
As you look, being on the other side of your 07 one-star admiral military career, and you get to have more opinions about the things that are going on, whereas you may have had to keep them a little bit close, does it surprise you knowing the background that you have and having seen so much of the world, that a lot of the left, especially on the far left, has seemed to kind of abandon Israel. That used to be something that Republicans and Democrats relatively saw eye to eye on. In fact, I would guess more of our Jewish American friends 20 years ago and prior found themselves as left-leaning members of the American constituency, and that has clearly changed. Does it surprise you at the tone that some of the people on the left have taken with such sympathizers with Hamas, who is by every first world government regarded as a terrorist organization?
Yeah, so interesting the way you put that, Ben. I would say that the maybe not the extreme left, but a lot of the folks that are coming out and questioning the support for Israel now, and looking to revisit how we sell them weapons and how many weapons we sell them and how we support them diplomatically. I would say that it's not their support of Hamas, but their view of what's happening to the Palestinian people that is starting to sway them to question the relationship that the U.S. has with Israel and how much support we're providing.
I am not somebody who questions the support of the Israeli government. And I, of all the people on the radio station, have been the most critical of Benjamin Netanyahu, because the way he put together his government and the things that he had to do in order to become prime minister again, like, guys at home, this is a man who has literally sought the highest office in the land off and on since Bill Clinton was the president of the United States. Like, if there's one argument for term limits, that man is proving it. I don't care if you guys want to all feel the same way. Put something in place and at least find a new guy to say it, because one of the greatest gifts we give our country is that we put our people out to pasture after 8 years in the highest office.
You know, I'm a big proponent that Israel should elect whoever it is they feel is the right person for that job. And he was duly elected, there were some fits and starts as he put his coalitions together. But I think it's really the Israeli people are starting to question whether he is the right guy now.
Well, when you looked before October, he was very divisive, much like you see in this country, but in a greater way. He was a very divisive figure to put back into that role. And then when that Hamas attack happened, his popularity grew at the beginning. But I think as you see a lot of people around the West, to the point of I'll just tell you, there are plenty of people who live in Palestine out of necessity. It's not like they wake up with a whole bunch of options. Like, there's a lot of people in Gaza who are refugees, and that does not get talked about on Fox News, but there is a huge portion of that population who lives there because they have no other options. They can't go to the east side. They're not allowed to cross the wall. They're really not allowed to go to very many places in the West. When we talk about poverty in this country, poverty in this country looks like a day at the Ritz-Carlton compared to poverty in pockets of the Middle East. And I don't think your average person walking around understands that we don't just all play with the same deck of 52 cards. Like, it's not worse over there. It's a lot worse. And I think what is going on certainly has the attention of the Biden administration, and deservedly so. And I don't condemn a lot of what he has said, but when it's about whether or not we know who our friends are, that's one of five or six or seven allies that this country has, hell or high water. And if somebody on the outside is going to go poke at them, like, you can do what you want to do until it's time for you to do what you have to do it. And I still think America, by and large, is on Team Israel, but it does surprise me to see some of the waning support.
You know, the devastation that you see in the news clips, in the reels, all the infrastructure, as you said, there's no place else for them to go.
No, they're stuck.
And now there are no hospitals and there are no houses. You know, there are people in tents. There are no kitchens. The rebuilding, the years, decades that it'll take to try and rebuild that. So you've disenfranchised this whole group of people when all you were trying to do was defend Israel and punish the perpetrators of this horrific crime that happened in October.
When you look at the funding of Hezbollah, Hamas, and knowing that there are sworn enemies of the United States who actively take part in that, do you think that the Iranian controversy with respect to the funding of Hamas has gotten the attention and notoriety that the American people should have on that issue? Or do you think that sometimes we don't know there's a war going on until there's a war going on?
I think the people that are really paying attention know. They get that information. They see that. And I'm sure that we are doing things behind the scenes to try and affect some of these outcomes.
I'm sure in the Armed Services Committee in the United States Senate, there's people on both sides who sit and listen. If they're not, I hope they do, because it is, if you asked me, the most pressing controversy in the day, and it's funny because this can change over the course of 6 months, I would have given you a different answer. But I think that the, to use your words, the boiling pot that exists over there in 2024 has become the biggest issue in the world that has the potential to affect the West literally overnight. And to know that there are sovereign governments that are looking at responding to attacks, not through terrorist groups, not through Department of Defense contractor organizations, but as nation states to sit there and point guns at one another, that becomes an entirely different conversation and issue very, very quickly.
Yeah, I see that in a couple of different places around the world right now.
Let me ask it to you this way. If the Iranians became directly involved in a conflict or a war with the Israelis, how different would life look in America? Because America would, they might not be in between the crosshairs, but they are certainly in the periphery of that conversation. Do you think that that's something that draws American troops in immediately or no?
No. I think we would do all that we could not to put troops, boots on the ground. But you can do a lot short of that in support, surveillance, providing intelligence and other information, targeting things. There's a lot you can do short of actually putting boots on the ground in support of our allies.
What scares me about them specifically is they're a country that has the ability and the intelligence and the capabilities around technology to make life difficult here in America, whether or not they directly engage in a conflict. That, to me, is the biggest issue. You can mess with so much when you get into our power grids, our critical infrastructure. If you don't have $50 in your wallet that's actually from the bank in cold, hard money, I might go consider walking around with some. I know that's a foreign concept to plenty of you under 30, but I don't think America is going to just be able to watch on the sidelines. I think that we will be directly impacted, even if it's not through a military use of force. You've seen surrogates of countries do things like shut off pipelines and offer critical infrastructure attacks to where all of a sudden gas in this country became $2 more per gallon, and it hurt average American people. We forget that so quickly.
Those are all things, you know, part of national security that hopefully we've got some of our best folks working on.
As you look at other issues around, now that that has more of the attention than it did 6 months ago, and you look at Taiwan and you look at the conflict with China, you just got back from Taiwan, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Is it still occupied by what appears to be a free, duly elected government?
Yes. Yeah, it's a great place to visit.
You're not trying to move there?
No. It is a long way. It was a long flight.
Yeah. It makes Hawaii look like a pretty short trip. Yeah. Hawaii is about halfway if you're going out there. As you look around, knowing the Biden administration is facing an election and knowing that Donald Trump is breathing down his neck and knowing that the Biden administration has no shortage of issues with respect to, regardless of if the economy is fine or not, your average person in the middle class feels like it is not. And on some level, when you were running for office, perception is reality. If there were a handful of things that you think he could shore up before November and bring confidence back into the American people, what would they be?
Yeah, the economy, the border wall, or the southern border, I think has created some problems for the Biden administration. The economy has, although there are a lot of indicators that say the economy is doing pretty well.
There are. Every time I look at my retirement accounts, like week over week, like they continue to go up. So yeah. I'm one of the people who kind of skeptically lives and says, hey, if we're all going to look around and say that the economy is terrible, I will accept this in its current form. Do you feel like looking at 2024, do you feel like immigration and that southern border wall is the biggest issue that faces, that is the most, do you feel like that is the most polarizing issue to average walking around people?
I think it's one. I think there are a couple. I think abortion is one. I think that southern border is another. I think immigration in general. you know, not just the southern border, but the immigration policies in general. I think what's going on in the Middle East and in Ukraine and the bubbling pot, I'd call it, out there in the Pacific, because, you know, China, Xi, has said that he wanted his forces ready. Didn't mean that they were going to take any action, but he wanted his military forces ready to take Taiwan in 2027. And so that's only 3 years away now.
Do you feel like the United States military is in position? We have made it very clear that we will support Taiwan in a military conflict with boots on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
The Trump administration had said it. The Bush administration had said it. The Obama administration had said it. They all say it. But the reality of a 21st century war with a nuclear power that also happens to have a billion people, you are as closely tied to the military as anybody in high ranking as anybody I can find. Do you lose sleep over what that conflict would mean to Americans?
Sure, and I hope we never come to that, because everybody loses. You know, nobody wins that war. But we have to also be ready to deter aggression. And the people in Taiwan, you know, they're even kind of split. There's some that just want to maintain the status quo. There's some that want to declare sort of independence and push back.
And there's some that probably still like the Chinese way of life.
And there's, yeah. But you know, those are the three big areas in the globe that I think bear watching. And they're sort of what I call the pulse points or pressure points.
Do you think that the war in Ukraine is closer to the end than it is the beginning? Or is it just the million-dollar question that nobody knows?
Yeah, if you'd asked me that a year ago, I would have said yes, and I'd been wrong.
Yeah, well, sure. So would Lloyd Austin. In fairness to him, he'd have said, yeah, I think this is probably going to wind down, and there's some negotiating that'll take place. It almost seems like America's absence in that conflict in 2024 from an arms perspective or a resources perspective might prolong it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But I could be wrong.
Well, I think they're piecing together what they can, getting munitions and arms from our NATO allies and from other places. But absent the big advantage that American weapons would give them, it's just kind of doing the best they can for as long as they can.
As you look at Chairman Xi and you look at President Vladimir Putin in Russia and the alliance that they have seemed to put together, do you think NATO still holds up well to it?
I think they do, yeah.
You think when push comes to shove, even though there's all the talk about NATO and the 2% of defense spending and all the things that I am plenty critical of the Donald Trump administration. He may have gone about it the wrong way to get everybody to bring their Department of Defense spending up, but damn if he didn't do it. I mean, he did.
No, and I give him credit for that because we fought that battle, so to speak, for a long time that people weren't ponying up.
Oh, and they weren't.
And
you know that as well as anybody.
Yeah, and it was always hard, and you couldn't get people to commit to that extra money that they were supposed to spend on defense. And a lot of them, during Trump's time, he pushed that and he got people to pony up and they started spending more on defense. And Ukraine has done that too. The invasion of Ukraine or the battle in Ukraine, the war in Ukraine, has had several of the European countries have increased their spending.
You have seen President Macron in France take more of a leadership role with respect to NATO, given, I don't know if it's Biden's age or his political positioning or whatever, where he's kind of been a little more absent from these conversations. And you've seen French leadership, of all things, out front and center over this defense of Ukraine. And he's going as far as to say he would want to admit them into NATO. I don't think the United States is ever going to be I don't think the United States is ever going to be a yes vote in that conversation. Do you think that the geopolitical times have changed to where we might just go along to get along? Or do you think that we just see that as kind of sticking our finger in the eye of a proud people with the longstanding legacy that Russia has as a pretty proud country, knowing that they're not getting into NATO?
I think we would support Ukraine. I mean, there are...
Oh, I don't. I think you'd have to have Russia just over a barrel.
I think that there's some things that some protocols that Ukraine would have to put in place, and other criteria they would have to meet. But I think I would be optimistic that not today or tomorrow.
But you think it's out there?
I think it, yeah, it's quite possibly out there. You know, I look at the big flurry of joinees in the wake of the
Finland.
Yeah, yeah.
Like invasion. Countries that we didn't even know they had a military. I mean, I say that half kidding, but
yeah,
truthfully, they didn't want to piss off big bad Mother Russia, and they share a border with them. And they're like, nope, we're coming.
Yeah, so that's exactly the point. They share a border with Russia.
Yeah, but they're not Russian. Like, the people in Scandinavia are not Russian people. The people in Ukraine can be confused as Russians.
Sure, but I think if the country wanted to join NATO and was going to contribute and be part of that alliance under the conditions that the NATO alliance exists in that support, I think that would be a good thing, and I think that we would support them.
Any final thoughts on the world's events before I let you go?
I hope that the temperature is dialed down here in the months and the year to come.
Well, we're on the weekend, so we got a little bit more of a mild audience than the people who just have their pitchforks out at 7 a.m. on Monday morning just ready to kick somebody's ass. No comment?
No.
This is Extra 106.3, Atlanta's only conservative talk station. Admiral Payne, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Ben.
We will be right back.
The warm air, the sounds of baseball, it's got you thinking about hitting the road. And no matter where your adventures take you, Subaru of Gwinnett has a vehicle to get you there safely and in style. Like the 2024 Subaru Outback, sporting standard symmetrical all-wheel drive and up to 32 miles per gallon. Or the 2024 Subaru Forester, the SUV with a spacious and comfortable interior for everyone you want to bring along. Start your shopping online at SubaruofGwinnett.com, then come see us for a test drive on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
This is the Ben Burnett Show on Extra 106.3.
Welcome back to the Ben Burnett Show on Extra 106.3, Atlanta's only conservative talk station. The final thing I want to get to are ballot questions. Each year after the General Assembly cycle, specifically when there is, you know, Republican and Democrat primaries, the parties themselves want to ask voters a handful of questions. Most of the time it is to gin turnout, but there are some interesting ones that are in there, and I'm going to take them in order. I'll start with the Republicans. And look, these are non-binding. It doesn't hold anybody to anything. But I think it's interesting to tell you what your legislators in the party specifically are thinking. Number one for the Republicans. For future elections, do you want hand-marked paper ballots scanned and verified by hand count on live stream video? I have no issue with that. I do think it can make it more bureaucratic. I don't think a lot of things are going to change. It doesn't, but it doesn't bother me. The more transparency you can have, I'm good with it. Number two. Should the state enact a fair tax replacing the state income tax and state sales tax with consumption equal to current state funding and taxing no legal citizen or family up to the poverty level of spending? You know, you can slice it one way or the other. I know that Burt Jones, the lieutenant governor, wants to reduce state income taxes to zero and tax it based on consumption. I think that's totally fine. I think that he realizes that policy and politics aren't the same thing, and telling voters that you want to reduce the state income tax to zero doesn't necessarily live in reality, but I'm not opposed to a consumption-based tax. Look, through my business, I write it off either way. In this case, it may just make it easier. Number three, should the legislature ban registered lobbyists from serving on the state elections board, yes or no? I would honestly say no. I know plenty of people in public service. I know plenty of people in government relations. I think those issues almost all the time are cut and dry. If you get to the state elections board, it's not partisan politics that are going to save you. You see Republicans target Republicans. You see Democrats target Democrats. I honestly think sometimes the people in your own party are more dangerous than the ones on the other side.
I'm not banning anybody from sitting on the state elections board, even though I'm sure that will ultimately pass and lead to some legislation. Look, your lobbyists, I mean, they got a job to do, but they're not evil people, and they know right from wrong. Four, should the Georgia Republican Party have a closed primary, meaning that only registered Republicans would be able to vote in a Republican primary? Yes, 100%. I don't want people crossing over. I don't think the Democrats really want people crossing over. And sometimes you find elections where Republicans or Democrats don't have anything on the ballot, so your people will likely skip it. And it sometimes leads to some crossover. I if the Republicans want to do that, I have no issue with it. On to the Democrats. These are honestly maybe more partisan, but there's one that is really specifically interesting. I'll save it for last. Should the state of Georgia incentivize clean energy production as a part of a climate change policy that recognizes the urgent threat to climate change that it poses to Georgians' health, lives, safety, and welfare? Yes or no? No, I think that's ridiculous. I have the climate conversation all the time. I don't necessarily think it's a hoax. I think we should all be good to the environment. But when we legislate it just based on partisan agendas, I'm not in favor of that. So yes, still a tried and true Republican. Should the state of Georgia expand voter access by allowing same-day voter registration, removing obstacles to voting by mail, and making secure ballot drops accessible at all times through Election Day? I think that leads to an immense amount of fraud. I'm not surprised that the Democrats would put this out there, but no, I think it's horrible. I think that if you look at the Republican approach to the scanned verification, counting, live stream, all that, I think that makes way more sense. But Democrats want people to be able to vote on the same day because they're good at generating turnout. You know, especially if you look around the country, I think they're really good. Stacey Abrams, for all her flaws, had an incredible machine around her that got people to vote. The third question, should the state of Georgia protect reproductive freedom by repealing the current 6-week abortion ban, restoring protections on Roe versus Wade, and ensuring access to contraceptives, IVF, abortion, and other reproductive health care? Oh, I think that one would start to get interesting. That's one I would really like to see on a Republican ballot. I think there are a lot more Republicans that don't like the 6-week abortion ban than you could possibly imagine. But I really don't know. And the Republicans, like, look, I'm plenty conservative. I'm plenty pro-life. They don't want anything that has to do with abortion anywhere near a voter referendum. Even though this is non-binding, that will be very heavily weighted towards the Democrats, probably like 90-10. But the most interesting question from both parties happens to be the first one on the state Democrat ballot. Should the United States and the state of Georgia protect Georgians from gun violence by banning assault weapons and large-capacity magazines, closing background check loopholes, and passing other common-sense gun safety reforms? I think this one is really interesting, too. I would love to see it worded less partisanly and appear on a Republican ballot. Do I think that Republicans would be in favor of banning assault weapons? No, but I think a couple of them would. And I actually think if you put that issue to the American people, that I think you get to 55 or 60%. And that's another conversation that the Republicans don't want to have. But the really interesting portion of that, in my mind, is around the large capacity magazines. Hear me when I say this. I think that issue is one of the most interesting and dynamic conversations that this country is going to have in the next 10 years. Should the Democrats gain a majority nationwide in the House of Representatives and approach anything near a supermajority in the United States Senate? When you talk about high capacity magazines, like if you've got an AR-15, not putting them down. I own one. I haven't shot it in years, but I have one, and you can put 25 bullets in it. I think it depends on how you define high capacity magazines. And look, I'm not saying, look, if the Democrats take an inch, they're eventually going to want a mile. I know that. I'm willing to say that out loud. I know it's true. You know it's true. But if you would define what a high-capacity magazine is, I think you can get Republican support. Maybe not in the legislature, maybe not in Congress, but your average walking around person in the United States of America, there are absolutely none of us that think that I need an AR-15 and a 500-round magazine. I don't even know if that exists, but if they would define what a high-capacity magazine is, I think it would be a very interesting conversation nationwide. And I don't think that's one the Republicans want to get anywhere near. And I understand why. but I think their constituents would love to have that conversation. I do. I don't think there's any getting around it. It is something that is a polarizing issue, whether or not it is grounded in reality or not. I think there are a lot of moms in my listening audience that will send me DMs when this is over and say, I have never had anybody willing to engage in this conversation on the right. And I think it's the right thing to do. Is it 25? Is it 30? Is it 500? I don't know. And Congress and the legislature, they're not in the business of actually solving this issue. They would rather raise money off of it both ways. But it is interesting. You can catch the Ben Burnett Show on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Tuesdays, I do long-form interviews. Tuesday, I have longtime Georgia Senator Don Balfour. If you went to Georgia Gwinnett College, he was the guy who dropped the bill to make that happen. He was one of the guys who ultimately voted when Georgia took the stars and bars off the flag some 25 years ago. He saw a lot. He was also indicted by a Republican attorney general and was found innocent over falsifying expense reports. I have a lot of interviews. It is one of the best ones I have ever done because he doesn't hold back. He names names. He talks about all sorts of people that wanted to see his political career end and why. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Burnett, and you can follow me on Instagram at The Ben Burnett Show. This is Extra 106.3 Atlanta's only conservative talk station. Have a great balance of the weekend. We will see you guys next time. Make it a good one.
The warm air, the sounds of baseball, it's got you thinking about hitting the road. And no matter where your adventures take you, Subaru of Gwinnett has a vehicle to get you there safely and in style. Like the 2024 Subaru Outback, sporting standard symmetrical all-wheel drive and up to 32 miles per gallon. Or the 2024 Subaru Forester, the SUV with a spacious and comfortable interior for everyone you want to bring along. Start your shopping online at SubaruofGwinnett.com, then come see us for a test drive on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.